Welcome to The More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right, we have...
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left, we have...
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal and third runner-up in the Space Force Color the Insignia contest from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Only third runner-up? I thought you would have placed higher.
If I was saying it, I would have gotten a moon astronaut ice cream. But
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate from Los Angeles, California. And before we get into Space Force and the other fun stuff of the week, I want to brag that I am broadcasting on a brand new microphone tonight, something that I treated myself to, but there's a good reason behind it. And here's the story. Last night, I attended an event in Los Angeles called Champions for Children, a fundraiser for the San Fernando Refugee Children's Center, which raises money for children who have come to this country from third world countries, including Latin America, and now is raising money specifically to help defend children separated from their parents who are going through legal proceedings to either try to be reunited with their parents or to at least stay in this country. You guys know that my girlfriend Jessica is a Pilates instructor, and one of her clients is a fairly well-known Latin American actress named Ivana de Maria, and she is one of the co-sponsors of this event, and it was really amazing. They raised thousands and thousands of dollars. They had a big event, a lot of stars from the Latin American Telemundo-style, Univision-style soap operas were there, and they had some other celebrities. They had a charity auction. It was really great, and I just wanted to mention that because it's a really good organization, a really good cause. So if you're interested, go online and look up the San Fernando Refugee Children's Center. Send them a little money. What they're doing is going a long way to helping those children who were separated from their parents.
How does the new mic fit into all this, though?
Oh, thank you. I almost forgot. I bid on it and won it.
I knew there was a story there.
Yes, I bid on it, and no one else was bidding on a microphone. So I didn't have stiff competition, but it was part of my donation to the cause. So it's going to be a memory for me every time I use it to think about those children and to think about what we can all do to help bring a little bit more justice to our country.
Wow. So not only do you have a nicer mic than all of us, but now you get to lord over this sense of like you're better than all of us because
you I was always
better. You get to do all this. Well, good for you. One, congratulations for helping out a good cause, and two, good for you for making yourself feel better than all of us.
I actually will put some information about this organization on the website with our podcast information so people can find that and maybe make a contribution themselves.
Okay, cool.
So, DJ, you were right about Ohio 12. You called it, although there's no official winner yet.
That's what I called.
It looks like, yes. It looks like the Republican is going to probably win this one, although from what I understand, the vote tally keeps narrowing a little bit every few days. So, DJ, do you think that this was a win for the Democrats, or do you fall into the a win is a win is a win school of thought?
I do not fall into the a win is a win is a win school of thought, not on a by-election that does not decide who maintains control of the House, and this by-election did not. I look at the numbers, I look deeper into the numbers, and they tell me that the Republicans are in very big trouble. This was a seat that the incumbent Republican congressman won by 37 points in 2016. Assuming the Republican nominee does win, he will win by less than 1 point. That's an 18-point swing, as the Brits would say, away from the Republicans and towards the Democrats. Even if you use Trump's figures, he won the district by 11 points. It's a 5-point swing away. There are, I think, 68 Republican-held districts where Hillary Clinton did better than she did in Ohio 12. All of those districts look vulnerable now. That's not good for Republicans. Even if Mr. Balderson does manage to eke this out,
Yeah. And Greg, this is your backyard, so what do you have to say about it?
Well, first of all, the fight's not really over. There are, I think, 5,000 absentee ballots still yet to be counted and 3,000 provisional votes. That's like our bread and butter right now. Provisional votes can fall into places where Democrats or anybody, quite honestly, voted in the wrong precinct or the wrong voting. No one gets lost more than Democrats. And as far as early voting or late voting, now a lot of those absentee votings could be overseas, military, which does tend to swing Republican. But even still, literally, it's 1,000 votes around there, and that number keeps shifting. With 8,000 votes still yet to be counted, this is anybody's race. The fact that the GOP candidate has claimed victory, that's counting chickens before they hatch, as we say here in Ohio.
I think the new line is you always claim victory, even if there is going to be a recount, because for some reason that gives you some edge in the public's mind, or if a ruling goes against you, then you can claim you've been robbed. George Bush did that in 2000. He claimed victory immediately, and it put the Gore team on the defensive for the rest of the recount.
That's how you got your mic last night. You screamed, "I won! I won!" before they were even counted, they were like, "No one else is voting against you," and you're like, "I won!" Yeah, you know all about this. Yeah, sure.
And DJ, there was also a big primary in Kansas that day. What was the outcome of that big one?
Yeah, the Republican primary for governor pitted the incumbent, who took over for Sam Brownback, against Chris Kobach, the Secretary of State, who Trump tasked to find the 3 to 5 million illegal voters for Hillary Clinton. He could not find them. That's my narrator voice. It's a sucky narrator voice, I understand. But in any event, Kobach decided to parlay this nonsense into running for governor, and the two are now about 100 votes apart as we speak. It will almost certainly go into a recount. Kobach had to recuse himself from the recount because he's Secretary of State there. And among other things, if Kobach wins the nomination, it means the Democrats could actually win the governorship in Kansas in the fall. But the fact that he came this close is another sign that when Donald Trump speaks and Trump endorsed Kobach the weekend before the election, Republicans listen, because Collier was expected to win handily until Trump endorsed Kobach. So the congressional elections, I'll mention them, the congressional elections quickly because for the most part, the left faction of the Democratic Party did not do particularly well. They put hard in the third district, congressional district, and they did not win. I think they won one of the other districts because they latched onto the favorite. But the one that everyone was focusing about was the Kansas GOP race. We have a guy who listens to us, Kyle Farmer, and thank you, Kyle, for continually giving us updates on what's going on out there. And he described it as pretty much a rupture in the Republican Party of Kansas from top to bottom.
But
interesting.
But the Kansas GOP has been rupturing for, what, the past 10 years? I mean, it's a messed up system. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible failed experiment in terribleness. I mean,
can you be more specific? You're talking about the tax structure with Sam Brownback?
When Sam Brownback took office in 2011, he said, okay, the plan is here. We're going to reduce these various income taxes, and then we're going to raise some expenditure taxes to cover it. We're going to cut some spending here and there. And the legislature said, okay, great. Yes, we'll cut the income taxes. We're not going to touch the expenditure taxes, and we're not going to cut any spending. Yeah, that's going to work. And of course it didn't work. Kansas also, this may surprise people, but Kansas also relies very much on its oil sector. So when the price of oil plummeted in 2014, they took another economic hit. And essentially, the legislature, by the time the legislature realized that, oh yeah, something was really, really bad was going on, you had Brownback, who just got reelected in 2014. He said, no, we're not touching the income taxes. We're not reversing them. The legislature said, well, we would rather not cut spending because, well, we love spending. We're a legislature. And so the Republican Party split in two. Some Republicans joined with Democrats to reverse some tax cuts, if memory serves, or stop the ones that were going to take into effect. In any event, Greg is right. Long story short, the Republican Party in Kansas has been pretty bitterly divided, and has been bitterly divided for quite some time. But now that is out in the open for everybody to see in the Collier Kobach battle.
Have you guys read? Have you guys read "What's the Matter with Kansas" by Thomas Frank?
No, not yet.
I actually have two autographed copies. One I actually met the author. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And then the other one, I just happened to be at a bookstore and found it, which is awesome too. But it talks about the populists, and this is a group, this is a state that should clearly, clearly be voting Democrat for their self-interest, and yet they continually vote GOP for no reason. Actually, there's reasons in the book. And they honestly fall into that whole, well, gosh, Democrats, all these yuppie, you know, East Coast, you know, Volvo driving. It's a great, great book. I highly recommend it. It really kind of opened my eyes to, because growing up, I'm a Democrat. And I was like, people think of me as like, I don't drive a Volvo. I don't, you know. I don't have a ponytail anymore. I had one in college, but gosh, didn't everybody?
Greg, did he get into the broad spectrum of the Kansas Republican Party at that time?
I don't think he did. I think he left that. I think it was an editorial decision to leave that chapter out.
So basically his idea was, I'm going to portray an entire state as a bunch of idiotic yahoos and pay no attention to what actually is going on the ground there.
I think you're getting Kansas confused with Florida.
Well, no, nobody knows what the hell's going on in Florida. That's why the damn thing is still in the Union. It's so freaking entertaining to watch.
And I take that back, because I really do like, there's a lot of good things about Florida. So,
and they have a great governor's race going on there.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Yeah. We should spend some time next week.
Or no, it's a Senate race. It's Bill Nelson is trying to defend his seat from the current governor.
From the governor, Rick Scott.
Rick Scott.
Yeah. I still haven't figured out how Scott got elected the first two times.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. And the fact that Rick Scott hasn't been like chased out of that state, like with like tarred and feathered.
I mean, even when I was a Republican, I was like, really? How does he win?
The guy was charged and I think convicted of Medicare fraud. Before he was governor,
he is a CEO who looks like Pinhead on Weight Watchers.
Yeah.
Okay, that's like a personal. That's like a personal.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. No, but he's. I mean, he's got. I mean, and you know, God, there's no really nice way to say this. Oh, thankfully, I've had enough vodka that I don't care. But I mean, seriously, when you look at him, he's got the evil genius look. And that's highly unfortunate. That's more a reflection of how we portray evil geniuses than Governor Scott himself. But he still has that look. There's no way to escape that. And yet the guy won twice.
By the way, speaking of governor's races, although we were speaking of a Senate race, but that was a ham-handed attempt at a transition. There's a big governor's race coming up in Arizona. And the reason it's big is not just because it will determine who is the governor of Arizona, but it may actually end up determining who controls the Senate in 2019 or 2020. Because as everyone knows, Senator John McCain is very ill, possibly terminally ill, probably terminally ill.
Sadly.
And if he passes, his replacement will be appointed by the governor of Arizona. And I'm surprised that the press hasn't paid more attention to that. Doug Ducey is the current GOP governor of Arizona. Obviously, if he wins re-election, he would probably pick another Republican to replace McCain. But if the Democratic challenger, who's will be determined in a primary coming up, I think in about 2 weeks, if he was to succeed in winning the governor's mansion, a Democrat would be picking the next senator for Arizona. So while everybody is watching the midterms and wondering, you know, watching the Senate races and the House races, that one's a big one too.
I am now going to put my vodka down, take a gigantic bucket of cold water, and pour all over Kevin's argument. and here's why.
But not on my new mic. Not on my new mic.
No, your mic's... No, we leave your mic alone. My arm is not 3,000 miles long anyway. But even if it were that long, I would not pour it all over your mic.
Okay, go ahead.
Two problems with that. One, the... as I understand it, the conventional wisdom is that if and when John McCain relinquishes that seat, either by resignation or death, his wife or widow would be appointed to replace him, and she would be, again, under Republican governor. And it is also very likely that if she were to run in the special election, she would almost certainly win. Widows usually do win. The first time. Once widows become incumbents, they are incumbents. That's a different story, as Missouri would tell you. But I think it is likely, under the circumstance where a Democrat defeats Governor Ducey, I think it is far more likely that you would see Senator McCain actually resign before January of next year to ensure that his wife would then replace him. I think that is far more likely than any Democratic governor being in a position to appoint McCain's replacement.
Interesting. Okay, well, you know, that's an interesting prediction. We'll see what happens. So as we do this, you know, we tape on Sunday evenings, and the Charlottesville Unite the Right demonstration happened today. There was also a small one in Washington, D.C. Greg, you want to give us a little background on what you think went down there?
Well, when you say small, I mean, that was in the one in D.C. was literally several dozen people.
Two dozen. It was about 24 people.
24 people. So to even give it any credibility, I think, is kind on your part.
But let me ask you this, Greg, and actually to both of you guys. Is the fact that you had 500 to 1,000 counter-protesters out there raising a ruckus, being labeled Antifa, whenever there's some pushing with the police, it looks like violence is breaking out. Did we actually give them positive press today by showing up in force?
No, we did not give the Nazis any real benefit. The counter-protesters did not really do anything to benefit the Nazis. There were too few of them anyway, two dozen. In D.C. And actually, there was no Nazi presence in Charlottesville this weekend, from what I can tell. And from
exactly.
What I read. But what the violent folks among the counter protesters did do, and there were a few of them, not very many, but enough. They gave the Republican Party some crap to fundraise over.
Well, that's exactly my point. That's exactly my point.
Well, when you, the question you asked was, I thought the question you asked was specifically related to the Nazis and the alt-right, and I don't
right.
think they're going to get anything out of this at all. But
so who's going to raise money off of it?
But the Republicans, frankly, the Republican Party is going to be able to raise money off of it.
Well, I see them all as one big ball of yarn, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I get that, but you know, you always, and I mean, remember, even in Dante's Inferno, there were 9 different levels of hell. So,
wow.
And then there's that other communist entity that keeps getting involved in our elections, Fox News.
Oh, gosh,
and especially Laura Ingraham, who made some really rather.
Racist.
Weird comments.
No, just say it. Racist.
Week.
Racist.
Yeah, well, they seemed racist to me.
Here's a pro tip for all you listeners out there. When you're talking about demographic changes, you're talking about race.
Right. And then for her to come on the next night and go, oh my goodness, I was pretty sure I didn't say race. I was not talking about color or ethnicity. I don't know. I was talking about, you know, other things. But she didn't actually say what the other things were.
Yeah, let me say this again for those in the back. When you're talking about demographic changes, you're talking about race. Thank you.
Her exact lines were, parts of this country are going through massive demographic changes that we did not vote for.
Yeah,
and
I love that
line. We do not like.
Yeah.
Which, fine, okay, cool. That's a dog whistle, or that's a call to racism. But the point is, What was she talking about then if it wasn't race? Was she like, oh, I've noticed there's a lot of tall people in this area. I've noticed there's a lot of mailmen who, you know, eat beef sticks. These are... What the... Seriously, what was she talking about that she can then get indignant the next day? Like, how dare they call me a racist? That's some major spin on her point, and for her to say, well, I was obviously talking about people, vegans are obviously this demographic that I did not vote for. She's wrong.
The other thing I would note is that identity politics has been with America for as long as America has been America. Most Americans, in fact, who consider themselves white Americans, and especially those who vote with Donald Trump and who love what Laura Ingraham has to say, would not have been considered white 150 years ago. All right, Irish wasn't white in the 1860s. Italian wasn't white in the 1860s. Polish wasn't white in the 1860s. Polish and Italian weren't white in the 1910s, for crying out loud. The definition of white has changed over time. And in part, it's part of the sort of the myth of the American melting pot is that literally everybody who's European gets to be white. Well, okay, that doesn't really work for the folks who aren't European. And, you know, maybe we should have paid attention to them all the way through. The fact of the matter is here, we've always had changes in the demographic nature of America. It's what makes America better. You know, you don't want to limit yourself to certain DNA strands. You know, cultures die like that. Countries die like that. And I would rather not the United States of America die. I would rather the United States of America change.
Yeah. Did either of you guys get a chance to see the new Spike Lee movie this week, the Black Klansman movie?
I have not yet. I've heard good things about it, but I have not seen it yet.
Very interesting movie. Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a perfect film. A lot of plot twists that maybe stretched credulity a little bit, but really interesting look at racism in contemporary. I mean, I consider the 70s and the 80s, you know, still contemporary America. And then when they juxtaposed it against some actual news footage from Charlottesville and from things that have been going on in this country in the last 2 years, it's really frightening.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
So now let's have some fun talking about the real news story that everybody's been talking about.
Wait,
this week.
That wasn't fun? I'm confused.
I was going to say. Always leave them laughing.
Space Force.
Space Force.
Commander Matusak, will you give a report, please?
Oh, my gosh. So, you know, when this was brought up initially, Trump said, well, I think we should have a Space Force. And we all kind of giggled and we all kind of laughed. And we said, obviously, someone didn't take a nap or someone left Voltron on and he woke up. He's like, Space Force, this is it. You know, because he says the last thing that he sees. And, you know, cool. Or he watched Star Blazers, for those of you. DJ gets it. But now he's like roped everyone in. And in fact, the thing that really gulls me is they're selling Space Force merchandise. You can go to a website and you can vote on the Space Force insignia that you like best, which, by the way, they all suck. They all look like they've been drawn by like Jared. Jared, draw Space Force.
I'd love to know who owns the marketing on that stuff. And the,
yes. Yes. Because I don't think the government
intellectual
does.
Property. I'll bet you he does.
I bet you he does, too. In addition to that, we have 30,000 people, soldiers already dedicated towards protecting our space. It's called the Space Command. Now, is this just another layer of bureaucracy? Some would say yes. Wait, I am saying yes. So, and another aspect, he got poor Mike Pence to get up there. And Mike Pence can make anything boring, and he made this boring. So, yeah. So I guess this really is happening. We'll have this with his parade.
I don't
think
it's going to happen. The parade's going to happen. I don't think Space Force is going to happen.
I don't think that. I think Space Force will happen before it will go. It will go. Space Force parade wall as far as like imaginary.
Yeah, the parade's happening in late November. So
yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah. And they're going to push it back. Nah.
The Senate is never going to approve this Space Force shit. Come on.
As someone who works for a defense contractor, I'm just looking forward to the next big pot of money that we can jump after.
Yeah. Okay, so another thing that happened this week.
That was, by the way, that was perfect. Kevin just going, yeah, DJ's had to yeah. I'm just moving on. Well done, Kevin. Well done.
Well done.
I would salute you, but my glass is empty.
Well, what is the Space Force salute? I don't know. Is it like a Heil Hitler thing? I don't know. Vulcan thing? I don't know.
No. Actually, it's going to be the whatever they used for NASA's Distant Star Return project, which was of course Hydra in NASA.
Okay, so the other thing that was in the news this week was the 44th anniversary of the day that Richard Nixon announced his resignation, and then the next day was the 44th anniversary of the day he officially resigned. I found that moving because I remember those 2 days very well. I was 18. I was old enough to live them and enjoy them and revel in those moments because my family did not like Nixon. But I can't help but think about the parallels to what we're going through now. And there's almost too many to list. The fact that both men may be brought down, or in Nixon's case was brought down, by his White House counsel in the contemporary case. Trump may be brought down by one of his lawyers, Michael Cohen. And the fact that it may come down to a Supreme Court ruling as to whether in the Nixon case, whether he had to release the audio tapes of his meetings in the Oval Office. And now whether Trump needs to testify. So first of all, do you guys see any parallels, or am I just waxing nostalgia and hoping for a repeat? And, you know, where do you see Mueller's next move coming?
Well, first of all, I was only two when that happened. And so I don't remember any of it. I think DJ was only one when that happened.
You were only two and one?
That is also correct.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I think DJ's younger than I am, although you would think
I was 18. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I'm not younger by much, but I was 2 months shy of my second birthday when Nixon resigned.
Yeah, and I was just over two. I just turned two by a month.
Well, let me just tell you, chocolate tasted better back then. The skies were bluer, and the girls were taller because I was still pretty short.
Well, the girls were taller back then because, once again, I was two. I guess the only difference between that and this, and you've talked about the parallels, but the difference is this one just seems so stupid. The only thing that really bothers me is that it's taken so long, and that 35% of the country still thinks, well, obviously this is nothing, and this is just a giant waste of time.
Well, let me talk to that, because, again, being a little bit older and having a little bit of a real-time perspective of what it was like back then, part of the reason that people may think this one is dragging on so long, as opposed to, let's say, Watergate, is that back then you had, you know, the nightly news on all three networks, but obviously you didn't have cable news. So you followed Watergate in the newspapers and a little bit on the nightly news, but they only would dedicate, 20 seconds to 45 seconds to that news story, maybe on a big news night, a minute and a half to Watergate. Today, you have three cable networks, plus all of the Sunday shows that, you know, wallpaper the Russian probe and the Mueller probe. So I think that's one of the reasons why people think it's taking so long, is because they're inundated with it daily, all day long.
No, I think there's also the fact. I mean,
no, he just says no. Like, nah, forget
no,
what
you're
Kevin
wrong.
Said.
You and your nice fancy try. Mic, you're just wrong.
No, the fancy mic is fine. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Nixon was forced to resign for things done during the 1972 campaign, and he left within, he left 19 months after he was inaugurated for a second term. Donald Trump is still in office. He is still in power, despite an investigation for things he's doing in the 2016 campaign. The reason this is taking longer, and yes, it is taking longer because Donald Trump is still in office, is because this is a more difficult case to unravel legally and politically. The bugging of Democratic headquarters, the burglaries, the violation of, you know, the legal violations were clearly obvious for everyone to see, and the evidence was immediately available as soon as the Supreme Court said, yes, Richard Nixon, you have to turn over those tapes. Donald Trump had no taping system in Trump Tower. So the evidence is harder to get a hold of. It's harder to piece together. So yes, this is taking longer because getting the evidence together is taking longer. The chief witnesses are not cooperating the way they were then. Paul Manafort is effectively the John Dean of our time, and he's not cooperating.
No, I think Michael Cohen is the John Dean of our time, frankly.
Well, yeah, but Michael Cohen is not officially cooperating yet. He's unofficially cooperating.
Oh, he's going to cooperate.
I'm not saying he's not going to cooperate.
Oh, yeah, he will.
He is, but you know, this is going to take time. This is going to take longer because this is a harder nut to crack. This is a harder lock to unpick for all sorts of reasons.
Well, it's an international investigation that includes
exactly.
Russians who are protected yes. by Putin in Russia.
Yes, exactly.
So, of course.
Exactly.
It's going to be harder than a domestic,
right.
You know, where they essentially arrested five of the eight or nine perpetrators on the first night.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. That's why this is taking longer, and that's why you would expect it to take longer. It is also, I would say, far, far, far more dangerous than Watergate because it does involve a foreign power. It involves a hostile foreign power who has, however they did it, whether it was just the well, we know it's more than the Desinformatia because after the Mueller indictment of the Internet Research Agency, and that's basically what it was from 2 months ago, we now effectively know that it was in fact the Russian government that stole all sorts of emails and voter analytics and voter data from the Democratic National Committee. We know in that indictment that they actually got into some voter registration systems and screwed up with some voter registration systems. So we know there were crimes committed. We know there were crimes committed by the Russian government, and we know that that really didn't matter to Donald Trump. He clearly is perfectly fine with getting, as he called it, opposition research from a hostile foreign power. So I would say this is more dangerous, but because it involves an international angle, that's why it's taking longer for this to come to fruition.
And by the way, what's up with this Judge Judy guy? In the Manafort trial.
Judge Ellis?
The judge there is named T.S. Ellis III, and he's been behaving like Judge Judy in the courtroom. He's constantly berating the prosecutors, and he's contradicting himself on facts and what's admissible and what isn't. And he's clearly poisoning the minds of the jury. What do you think's going on with this guy?
Well, you know, he apologized in front of the jury.
Once.
And he's did it every day. And he said to the jury, he said, this is a high-profile case. And, you know, everyone is trying to get this right. And I get it. He is in the hot seat for this one. You know, the funny thing is, the first 2 days of this trial, if you read the CNN bylines, it was going on and on about, like, here's the testimony of the accountant, and here's the testimony of this, and here's the testimony of this. But if you were on Fox News, the only thing you read was about how this judge was just all over the Mueller attorney's ass. They were like, oh, he yelled at him for this, and he yelled, oh, this trial's over. You know, it's just going down the tubes.
Yes, the judge has been rather nasty with the prosecutors, but it's always been the same argument. Can we speed this up? Do we really have to go into this kind of detail? Can we just move this along? Blah, blah, blah. Again, he's upset that his naps are interrupted. Okay, fine. But the only time he actually really beat them up about the way the prosecution has presented itself, he stepped back and said, you know what? I was wrong. Oops, sorry. I goofed. And I don't think any of that really changes the evidence in front of the jury. And I, you know, if I were to make a prediction, I'm not making a prediction right now, so nobody panic. I would say it is far more likely that Manafort gets convicted of something than that he gets acquitted on everything.
Okay, but let's get back onto the topic of the Mueller investigation. I don't want to get too far afield.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, because you guys probably heard of, you know, what happened, I think, either yesterday or today, which is that Giuliani simply decided to claim that what Jim Comey said in the meetings with Trump before he was fired, they're now claiming that Trump never said it. After, you know, this is about 4 months after Giuliani acknowledged that it was said and explained what Trump meant by it. And today right. He came out and said, no, the president never said that. It goes to obstruction of justice. Everybody knows that obstruction may be the stronger case right now than conspiracy, although I think he's going to get nailed on both. Roger Stone is going to get indicted soon, folks. Just you wait. But they are so desperate that right now they are changing their story. And it's amazing. I saw, I think on CNN today, some analyst was saying, well, you know, what does Mueller do if he's got one witness saying one thing and the president, another witness saying another? It's a he said, she said kind of a situation. No, it's not. Because first of all, if you've changed your story, you no longer have credibility.
Exactly. I'm now interrupting you. If Robert Mueller is actually dealing with a case where it's he said, or she said, and it's Donald Trump versus anybody not named Omarosa Magano Newman, Robert Mueller is going to fall down on his knees and thank God for his good fortune. Because there is practically no one outside of Michael Cohen or Omarosa Magano Newman.
Manigault.
Outside of those two people, there is no one who has less credibility than Donald Trump. If Robert Mueller is in a position where he has to, and yes, I'm using air quotes with my fingers, if he has to ask the jury, do you believe person X or Donald Trump? Robert Mueller will take that every day of the week and twice on Sunday. The Cleveland Browns will win the Super Bowl before a jury believes Donald Trump over anyone else.
Let's make something clear here because we're missing facts. There are FBI agents who Comey told this story to contemporaneously when it happened. So it's not just Comey versus Trump or Comey versus Giuliani. It's the FBI versus Trump. And anyone who thinks that Trump is somehow going to come out on the winning edge of a he said argument, it's insane. He has no credibility whatsoever.
The other thing that happened this week that's kind of pertinent to this is that they were discussing how Trump would go and for questioning. And one of the things that Giuliani was really strict about was he would not have any perjury traps. Okay.
Now that's ridiculous on its face.
Right. First of all, what's a perjury trap? And they were explaining like
you can't perjury trap is Donald Trump. The man is a walking perjury trap.
Right. Exactly. A perjury trap, he said, you can't ask about things that you already know the answers to.
Well, first of all, yes, you can. You know, prosecutors use the lingo of a perjury trap when they know that they have conflicting testimony and they're waiting for the person who is now testifying, in this case it would be Donald Trump, right, to say something that contradicts what they actually have other people or other evidence proving. Right. That's a perjury trap. Not just, well, if the president says one thing and Comey says something different, they're going to set him up. And of course, as everybody on cable news has been saying for the last 5 months, it's not a perjury trap if you answer truthfully. And the president is expected to answer under oath truthfully.
Right. If it was good enough for Bill Clinton, why can't this guy answer things truthfully?
Here's what's going on with this whole testimony thing. This
Tell
is my
me.
Theory. Here's my theory.
Preach.
The Trump legal team and Trump figure it this way. If the Republicans hold the House.
Which they won't.
If they do, it makes no difference. They're not going to agree to a sit down. Mueller can subpoena him. They think they'll probably win the subpoena argument in the Supreme Court. But even if they don't, they can still just defy the Supreme Court, because what are they going to do? Issue a contempt of court citation? Nothing's going to happen because the GOP holds Congress, and a GOP Congress led by either Kevin McCarthy or Jim Jordan are not going to impeach the president. If the Democrats take control of the House, then it's a different calculus. Then they're either going to contest it in court, or what I think will happen is suddenly they'll be amenable to a sit down because they don't want to take a chance of losing the court case and having to have the president testify under oath without an attorney present for as long as Mueller wants, asking any questions that he wants. That is their nightmare scenario. But it's all going to shake out after the election. That's what I think.
I think they'll try to get it done before the election.
Get done what? Who? Who's going to get what done, Greg?
Yeah,
No,
I'm actually going, I'm presenting what I call the McClellan scenario.
Okay.
For those of you who have no idea what
General McClellan?
For those of you who have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, Abraham Lincoln, President Lincoln, actually waited until the midterm elections in 1862 to fire General McClellan. And part of it was, you know, McClellan was very popular, McClellan was well-liked, and Lincoln did not necessarily want to Lincoln was concerned that if he did it before the election, it might screw things up and the Democrats might actually take over the House of Representatives. The Senate was never in question in 1862. But once it became clear that the Republicans and the Unconditional Unionists had a majority in the 1862 elections, he was in a position where he could fire McClellan, and he did. I honestly believe that if the Republicans hold the House in November, then Donald Trump will feel that he can get Mueller fired. And I think it won't be a matter of, you know, Trump can't fire Mueller personally, but he can fire Sessions and fire Rosenstein and then replace him with people who will fire Mueller. And I think that is the action he will take if the Republicans hold the House of Representatives in November of 2018. I think that's going to be his next move.
Right. And if he doesn't, this is another thing. You know, I'm one of these people that thinks that Mueller should just go ahead and subpoena the president. And frankly, it wouldn't bother me if he also indicted him if he could prove crimes. But the subpoena thing, a lot of people are saying, well, Mueller has a very political calculation to make, because what if he tries to subpoena the president and he loses? That would kind of weaken his credibility in the eyes of the country. I don't see that at all. In fact, I see it just the opposite. Let me explain why, and then, Greg, you can tell me why I'm wrong. I'm used to that on this show.
I thought that was my job.
Yeah, well, no. I want to spread the love. But let me tell you why I think that Mueller should absolutely subpoena this SOB, and he should subpoena him now. Because, first of all, the sooner he subpoenas him, if it happens before the Kavanaugh hearings, then you have a lot of Democratic senators who will ask him, will you recuse yourself if this case comes before you? Now, obviously, Kavanaugh is either going to dance around that and refuse to answer it, or he's going to answer in a vague way, or say, you know, this is a decision that I would make when the case is presented in front of me. So I don't expect Kavanaugh to necessarily promise to recuse himself. I don't expect him to not get confirmed because of this. But once you establish that he's been asked that question, it makes it a lot more politically difficult for him to rule in favor of the president who just appointed him. But let's say he does. Then what you're looking at is you've got a 5-4 or a 6-3 decision in favor of the president, where two of the people who voted his way were people that he appointed to the court. In the eyes of the public, it will not be a legitimate decision. And I'm telling you, if the Democrats win the House, he is going to be impeached. He's not going to be convicted, but he is going to be impeached.
Yeah, but he doesn't care about the eyes of the people. He only cares about the eyes of the 35%, his base.
Well, he thinks that somehow that they're going to give him political leverage over enough congressmen and or senators to avoid being convicted. And he's probably right. But, you know, the law works differently. And when Mueller presents his findings in a report, and then let's say the Democrats win the House, the Democrats start impeachment hearings, they vote to impeach, it's sent to the Senate. Even if Mitch McConnell is still the leader of the Senate, he has to move forward on that. He can't just table an impeachment trial for another year or two. You're going to have very well-trained prosecutors. They would be congressmen who are, have a background in being prosecutors, presenting a damning case. Now, again, I'm assuming that the case is going to be there, but I believe it will be. They're going to present a damning case that is going to be seen by every single American. And Trump's 35% is going to start to dissipate. It's not going to go away. There's still going to be hardliners who will stay with him. But if he gets down under 30% in the polls, you know, that's when Nixon really started to realize that his situation was untenable. I don't know that Trump is going to resign, but I think even if he was acquitted in the Senate, his popularity and his public persona would be so damaged that he would lose re-election.
I think, first of all, we need to take account of the fact that we really don't know what Bob Mueller knows. I really don't know what Bob Mueller's strategy is. He is a person who does not leak and who does not like his office leaking, which makes him very, 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 very strange in Washington, D.C., believe me. So Robert Mueller is going to subpoena Donald Trump when he thinks it can best help its case. He may wait until after the Manafort convictions to see if Manafort will flip. He's obviously building a case against Roger Stone. Maybe he wants to go to run that through. Now, Robert Mueller is thinking about convicting people and putting them in jail. He's not necessarily focused on all the things that we're thinking about right now.
Oh, yes, he is.
Well, but he's not as fixated on it as we are because he's got actually legal cases he's putting forward.
Well, no, because he's got a day job.
Well, this is that thing. This is his day job.
But I'm saying his day job is to put together this entire case where we can focus on just the Trump conspiracy.
Yes, I get that. I get that. Yeah. I get that. Yes, and you're right. But I also have to take issue with, Kevin, your assertion that Trump will end up falling below 35% into 30s. One, he's not at 35% now. He's somewhere between 40 and 42%. Secondly, as was evidenced by that meme we have all seen of the two clearly senile gentlemen who wore the t-shirts that said, "I'd rather be Russian than a Democrat," there are a lot of people out there who are so vested in their vote for Donald Trump and who are so vested in their hatred of Democrats and in particular of Mrs. Clinton that they are willing to justify just about anything. And even worse, there are a large number of Americans who frankly admire Vladimir Putin. They look at how he horribly persecutes the LGBTQ community. They look at how he basically kills every Muslim who lives in Grozny, Chechnya. They look at how he gives full support behind Bashar al-Assad, who kills anybody who disagrees with him and calls him a terrorist. And these Americans are dumb enough to actually think Bashar al-Assad is right. Don't get me started on that. We'll have another podcast for that nonsense. My point is at least one-third to two-fifths of America hate gays and hate Muslims more than they love this country. There's no nice way to put that, but there we are.
There we are.
So I don't think Trump's numbers will actually fall in any event. I do think if there is a case for impeachment, and I think there will be if all of the evidence comes to light, that the Democrats should move on impeachment. I don't think Trump will get convicted. I think he will get acquitted in the Senate. And I think then we have to recognize that he will run for re-election and his party will be behind him. Now, if he actually is impeached and he actually has to get acquitted by the Senate, then the information that comes out in that trial may make the American people skittish and decide.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's my exact
and I
point.
I am not saying that Democrats should not impeach the president. That's not what I'm saying. There may be very good reason to impeach the president, and I think there will be.
Oh,
by
please
January
don't give me that Bill Clinton argument that it's going to increase his popularity. Please,
right.
That's nonsense.
Yeah, no. I don't think that. I it's not a matter of increasing his popularity. I don't think his popularity will increase if he gets impeached. I'm saying that if he gets impeached, I don't think he's getting convicted, and I think he's going to stay, and I think he's going to be renominated. The issue
he'll probably be renominated unless, you know, it looks so bad, you know, if a John Kasich or somebody else, a Michael Bloomberg or somebody else runs against him, he might not get the nomination.
I disagree. He will get the nomination. I mean, Michael Bloomberg's basically a Democrat now, so that's not happening. My point is this. We cannot assume that Donald Trump will be railroaded out of office in 2019. That doesn't mean impeachment is the wrong thing to do. If the evidence points to it, and I think it will, then the Democrats need to move forward. My point is we can't just assume, one, that Donald Trump will be hounded out of office before 2020, nor can we assume that...
No, nobody's assuming that.
Yeah. Okay. Nor
nobody's
can we
assuming that, not
yeah.
here.
Yeah, and secondly, I am not ready to replace my judgment with that of Mr. Mueller. Mr. Mueller has refused to subpoena Donald Trump for now. I think he has good reason not to. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, with that, we probably should wrap things up. Thank you for listening. Please join us on Twitter at hashtag MPU Podcast or at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And as we always ask, please share our link on your Facebook timelines so your friends can discover us as well. And if you would like to join us in our political debate between shows, join us in our Facebook group, Open Fire. We're all there. We would love to see you there, too. Greg?
All right. Are we done?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm calling this on account of rain.